KPCA LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. And good morning, everyone. It's time for Inside Petaluma. We're here every Friday from 11 to noon, and I'm Cindy Thomas, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jason Davies and Janice Cater Thompson. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Hold on. There we go.
I'm here.
You're on. Alrighty, so we're in for another fine discussion, I'm sure, this morning. I have my notes in front of me now, and we have with us today Sergeant Jeremy Walsh and Officer Dan Miller from the Petaluma Police Department. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And, wow, we're going to have a great discussion today, I hope, about a program that you have going on at the police department. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. So we've specifically talked, I'm assuming you're talking about the active shooter program.
Absolutely.
Yes. So probably about, I don't know, about 16 years ago, 15 years ago, we started training to prepare for these types of incidents. And initially it started out very simple, and in the aspect of what the training was. We started out I believe the first incident was the training event that we had was at Corona Creek. It was the first time that we ever did it, and it was more or less just the police officers with Petaluma, and it was done during our annual training. What we ended up doing is taking that program and blossoming it into what it is now, and getting much more complex as incidents have become more frequent. We learned from those incidents, and so now it's gone to probably about 6 or 8 years ago, we started the Rescue Task Force and integrating the Petaluma Fire Department and Cal Fire and Rancho Adobe and some of the surrounding fire agencies, because we've learned from these incidents that the faster we save lives, you know, time is not on our side. So historically, it's always been that, you know, we surround and call out and wait for SWAT to show up. But in these incidents, time's not on our side. So fire has gone and done something that they don't feel very comfortable. They're not used to. And kudos to them for actually stepping up and recognizing this and, you know, wanting to train with us and go into these incidents and what they call the warm zone. And get to saving lives, because that's ultimately what these are about, is stop what's happening and immediately start saving lives.
No, I'm just curious, because Rona Park has, you know, police and fire, they interchange.
Correct. Yes, they're public safety.
Public safety. Yeah. And so in Petaluma, what you're saying is that the fire department is working closer with you in case of incidents.
Yes. And on the fire side, they've actually got vests, bulletproof vests and helmets that they wear when they go into these warm zones. They don't go into the hot zone, and what they consider the hot zone is, you know, where they close proximity to where the actual suspect may be. So they're partnered up with law enforcement officers, and they're called rescue task forces. The officers are providing protection for them, so they're not, you know, they're not armed. Their focus, number one, is saving lives, and our focus is protecting them so they can save lives.
I was reading in the local paper about the lockdown drills that you guys did. I think it was August 11th is when the article came out.
Yes.
And it looks like you guys went through a number of different scenarios. Obviously, you can't possibly do them all in mm-hmm. one exercise. So I guess my question is this something you're going to continue doing? How frequently will you be doing the drills?
So we typically do it every 2 years.
Okay.
What we would like to do and what we've seen the need for is having them more on a simpler scale and kind of work individually, and then every 2 years come together as a big group.
Mm-hmm.
These events, I was responsible for putting together the latest training. Logistically, they are pretty in-depth and getting all the resources together. So what the plan moving forward is that we're going to have smaller scale drills and then come together every couple years, maybe even go down to every year, to where we're integrating all these different fire agencies, police agencies, get California Highway Patrol, Sonoma County Sheriff's Department. Because in the reality, when something like this happens in our community, you know, the world's going to be coming to us because everybody's going to want to help. And, you know, the California Highway Patrol, the Sheriff's Department, Roanoke Park, they're all going to be coming to Petaluma to help us.
Yeah.
And so we want to take that next step and start integrating these other law enforcement agencies into the training so that if the unfortunate incident happens, that we're at least know what to do and are on the same page.
Sorry, we were going to ask a question.
Well, I'm just working with the school district and the teachers. What the preparation ahead of time?
That's actually what I was going to ask.
So last June, the principal or vice principal over at the at Petaluma High School asked me to come over and take a look at one of their lockdown drills. And so I just walked around with them. They're preparing for it, and it's a very touchy subject. You know, it's very sad that we have to have these drills.
Yeah.
But my message has always been that we need to have a plan in place.
Yeah.
Because in the unfortunate incident that something like this happens, at least our kids have something to fall back on as opposed to not knowing what to do. So, you know, we have earthquake drills, we have fire drills, and this is just another drill we need to have so that our kids know what to do, and, you know, the procedures is run, hide, fight. You know, first thing they need to do is run. Second thing they do is hide, and if they can't do any of those and it's coming down to it, then fight.
And the schools do these drills independent mostly of the force. Is there ever a thought, maybe I'm not even thinking about it correctly, but is there ever a thought to integrate those so that everybody's kind of practicing as a team?
Yes. We tried with this last one.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a very sensitive subject, you know, and so
it was before school started.
Correct.
As well.
It was over the summer, and teachers were getting ready for back to school and stuff like that. So the timing of it on our end maybe wasn't the most, you know, perfect.
Right.
But it's obviously an important training event that we need to have. So I was looking for participation. We asked for it. It just didn't happen. But there's definitely we would like to see that participation. On at least the teachers and administration side of it so that they can see what we do and they can kind of experience it. So in the event something does like this happen, they're kind of prepared. I mean, nobody will ever be prepared. Plus you work out all the kinks. What's better time during practice to figure out where the default deficiencies are and, you know, work through those. So, you know, again, hopefully nothing ever happens, but when something like this does, we're all prepared and ready, and we've worked out those issues.
On the news the last few days, Betsy DeVos wants to take federal funds and put teachers with guns. I know what my opinion is on that. I'm just curious. Have you talked to the has that been discussed?
No, that's not – I haven't heard anything about that for our teachers. I mean, that's a political issue. I don't take a stance on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's smart.
Okay, so I'm interested in knowing how you're building the relationship with the kids in the schools.
Yep. So I guess that would be directed towards me. My role there is to, number one, provide safety, and that's through getting the students, getting through to the students and start building a trust at the school with them, start building relationships. Getting into as many classrooms as possible. From a safety standpoint, we talked about earlier, and that's talking to the staff about what they can do better, what their expectations are in the classroom. Walking through with the assistant principals and the maintenance staff is looking at the bushes or trees near classrooms. You know, is that an area where items could be stored or stashed or somebody could be hiding. Mm-hmm. So from an overall standpoint, looking at maintaining campus security there is, you know, our goal.
You mentioned something on the break, Dan, regarding people's sense of safety in the schools. And I was a bit astounded by what you came up with, but let's maybe share that with the listeners. You were asking how safe the kids feel in their schools, and what was the response to that?
Yeah, so one of the things I've been doing, especially this first week of being at the school, was going into classrooms. One exercise we do is have the kids put their heads down, like heads up, seven up, and close their eyes, put their heads down, and ask them to raise their hand if they felt safe at school. So, you know, we did that exercise with one teacher and in a freshman class, and it was a majority for the three classes of about 50% only feel safe at school. So we have 50% of kids at school that don't feel safe for one reason or another, and that could be because of what's going on at TV. I mean, what's going on the television and seeing what's, you know, what's happening on the news and on the internet. That could be a bullying situation. It could be a variety of things. But as soon as that exercise is done, I talk to the kids and tell them that they need to come see me if they're not feeling safe and if there's anything I can do as a resource to them to let's talk through it and let's get to it.
That's great. So I imagine at some point you'll ask the same question and maybe there'll be hopefully more people that are feeling safe as a result of your presence.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, this isn't my first go around. I've been a police officer for 21 years now with the city of Petaluma. I can tell you that the best assignment during that time has been a school resource officer when my assignment was at Casa Grande High School from 2001 to about 2008. The relationships that I built there with staff and former students is absolutely amazing. It was fantastic. As a matter of fact, I was on campus and a former student was who lives nearby was walking by and she saw me and, you know, Miller, what's up? Came up, gave me a big hug, and she told me that she now lives over by Petaluma High School and was walking by. So a former CASA student still remembered me being on campus and we had some pretty fun times reminiscing about the shenanigans that were going on at CASA, but the relationships that we built there were very good and still to this day lasting for sure. So going back to that initial question is, you know, when I first got to CASA, the amount of students doing the same exercise, it was probably about 10% felt safe at school.
Wow.
That was a different climate back then. That was going back to Sergeant Walsh's days back in high school, I think he could attest. High school was pretty tough back then, and we were having a lot of calls for service regarding physical fights that were happening at school.
Okay,
certainly not the case now at all.
That's good.
I think, you know, times have changed, but after a period of time of being there at that school, 2 or 3 years later, you run that same exercise, and I think the amount of kids that felt safe were increased by over 60%. So we probably had 75% feel like they were safe at school. So
at the end of the year, and when you have middle school going into the high school, do you go visit the middle school before the students go?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been trying to hit Petaluma Junior High as much as I can, hanging out at lunch so they see a police officer on campus. Try to be as open and transparent with them as I can. Let them ask any questions that they want to ask and have them feel like there's a sense of security as well with me being on campus.
That's great. I think it's really important that they look at police officers as friendly people and they're actually there to support and help us instead of an adversary.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's a good barrier to break down.
Well, and of course, if people feel more safe, they're more inclined to focus on what they should be focusing on, which is teaching and being taught.
I think once those relationships are built, and it's today, before we came on air, I was on campus, and a senior came in who was having a difficult time in class. She was having some emotional issues that were going on, and she asked if she could come speak with me. And I thought that that was amazing that already after just being there only a week, she wanted to come talk to me about an incident that happened outside of school that affected her. She had some questions regarding it. And felt that I could help her out, and we got the necessary people for her to talk to and answer her questions, and she felt a lot better after coming in and seeing us.
That's great. You know, you feel safe enough to go and speak with somebody.
A stranger, really.
And, you know, there are a lot of personal information that people will be talking to you about, and yet you look at, you know, 5, 10 years down the line, she'll always remember that moment, and then she will do that for somebody else.
Yes.
That's great.
Well, it's great that you have so much experience also already with working in the schools, because you probably have a better rapport than someone who hasn't done it before. You probably carry yourself pretty well with the kids. You said you did some coaching previously.
Yeah, I've very involved in when I was at CASA with coaching football, and then the majority of that time was coaching baseball with Coach Maitrain at CASA. And from there, I moved on coaching on a national level and helping out coaching my boys as well. So,
and one of your boys is doing pretty well in baseball, you were mentioning?
Yeah. He just graduated from CASA last year and was drafted by the Oakland A's in the Major League Draft this last spring. Turned that contract down to go play at University of Oregon. So he'll be playing baseball there.
Wow. Good for him.
That's awesome. Thank Giants you. Didn't reach out to him?
We're more of an A's.
That's all good. I'm neutral on that subject.
I don't want to disappoint
you. We're A's fans and then you're Giants fans. We're kind of multi.
At least we're Bay Area.
It's all good.
I just want to kind of bring up that Sergeant Walsh was my neighbor when he was a young man. And it was
nice to terrorize a neighborhood.
Is there anyone in Petaluma you don't know?
And I can't remember. I can see his face, but I can't remember the resource officer when you guys were there. Do you remember?
I don't think there was one, to be honest with you. I know we had Dare growing up in Miwok. We had had Dare.
Okay.
But the actual SROs, we didn't have SROs until what year was it?
I think Danny and Ed Esponda were the first ones. Yeah, I was 2000.
Oh, it was.
2000.
Okay. That's probably what I'm remembering.
Yeah.
And how long has it been since that program went away?
That program stopped. John Antonio had a short stint over at Petaluma High, and I believe that was 2009.
Wow.
So it's been a long while since we've had them. Yeah. And John now is the school resource officer over at Casa Grande High School.
What I think is interesting about our police department is we have so many local people to work there. And, I think it's great. If you wanted to serve your community, and it's good for us, and it's great for you, and then, you know, your kids are growing up in the same community that you did.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
Yes. Yeah. We have, we've been very fortunate that we do have a lot of, we've got a lot of CASA kids that are now cops. We've got a lot of Petaluma kid guys that are cops, St. Vincent's, and it's just, it's our community. You know, our kids are here, our families are shopping in the same stores as you guys are, and it makes a difference. It's really neat to, we had a good conversation. I forgot why we were even here. We're reminiscing about all this stuff and catching up on old times, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was very heartwarming to catch up and find out what's going on and our grandchildren, children, and it's an important aspect of the community. So I really appreciate that.
The one thing I find just absolutely crazy after doing this job is now I work with kids that I coached at CASA.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's great, though, because you have a lasting rapport.
It makes me feel a little bit older. Definitely aging me a little bit.
We understand how you feel.
Well, that's kind of a funny story, feeling old. So when we were doing the training over at Petaluma Junior High School, so the custodian over there, Fernando, is walking around. I'm going, man, that guy was my custodian at Casa Grande. So I kind of go, hey, I walked over to him. I go, hey, you want to feel old? And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you a funny story. I go, you were actually my janitor when I was over at Casa Grande. And he just shook his head and we started talking. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a small community.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So this was made possible by a grant of over $1 million. How long is that going to allow us to have you on this full time?
Well, the grant, as far as I know, is a 2-year grant that was written, and I think hopefully from there that we find, either through the school district partnership or through the city, making sure that this is a lasting program, not just for the next 2 or 3 years or 4 years, but making sure that this program doesn't go away. I think there's a need for it.
What's your thoughts just generally in terms of the current staffing? According to this article, you have 66 allotted sworn officer positions, but there's a lack. It says 61 of the 66 allotted sworn officer positions are filled, but that includes officers on leave because of work-related injuries and those who are trained alongside more experienced cops. So are you feeling like you don't have enough officers and you need more?
Oh, I'll let Sergeant Wallace go back.
I'm sure I can speak for you on this. We're in some really troubling times. I mean, I've never seen staffing levels this bad. And it's really starting to affect our officers. We're carrying a heavy, heavy workload. The stresses of the work and the profession, and and having, you know, just the staffing levels at where they're at, it's really starting to affect us. And everybody in that building is doing, you know, taking on assignments because we, you know, as police officers, we want to serve. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And so every time that there's a task that comes up, our ultimate drive is to get that task done and serve our community and those that we serve with. You know, we want to make sure that everybody else is taken care of. And so, but it's starting to take a toll on everybody. You know, our dispatchers, our police officers, our records personnel. It's very challenging times, and I've never seen it like this before.
So is it impacting response times? I mean, it must be.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately it's going to, and if it hasn't already, but, you know, obviously the emergency calls are emergencies and we're going to get there as quickly as we can. But you know, I think on day shift, where are we at numbers wise for day shift is right around 5 or 6 officers,
five at
7 a.m. And then, you know, goes to 6 maybe at 9 o'clock is what our minimum staffing levels are. And then swing shift, we got another set coming in, and then graveyards. But recruiting is a challenge. You've got departments. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, does that look different on Friday and Saturday nights when downtown is like crazy? No.
It's the same.
Yikes.
When you look at the numbers, when you put it down on paper and you actually look, it's pretty scary.
And does that include Dan's position, or is it 6 plus?
No, Dan and John are in special assignments, as is traffic. Granted, traffic is there. Detectives are there during the day, but they're not there on the weekend. So in the event emergency were to happen, a major incident, obviously there's more cops there. But as far as patrol officers responding to calls for service and stuff like that and dedicated to that specific patrol function, those are the numbers. We've got people out on workers' comp and work-related injuries, and then we're facing retirements here in the next 18 months that our department, we're an older department. We went with, you know, about 10 years to where we didn't, because of the recession, we weren't hiring, and so there's a big gap. So we're going to have a big turnover in the next 18 months, and I think the numbers right now, we're at 5 vacancies. We potentially could be facing 4 more in the very near future.
Mm.
Officers going to other agencies. We're competing with bigger agencies in the county that have more specialties and more potential career assignments and stuff like that. So
compensation package.
Better compensation.
Bigger
pay. The pay is way better. So when you're trying to compete with that, and as new recruits are looking at, you know, Santa Rosa, even our officers are looking at, our younger officers.
That's actually a really good point. So relative to Santa Rosa, for example, are you saying that the compensation is actually lower in Petaluma?
Much lower.
Which is interesting because it's generally, I think, a bit more expensive to live here than Santa Rosa.
Correct. Yeah, we train at Fairfield to get outside the county. I know it's outside, but Fairfield, they had a hiring poster at their range, and they're offering a $10,000 signing bonus, and they're offering all these incentives and trying to get laterals and recruits coming in, and they're having no problems. And so, you know, other agencies in our county, Roanoke Park specifically,
mm-hmm.
They have these hiring incentives to where you know, we don't, you know, and I get the financial aspect of it and stuff like that, but the reality is we can't compete with that when they have these packages that they're able to offer up to potential candidates, whether it's laterals or brand new recruits. You know, as a young kid starting out in the profession, looking at that, you're gonna go and say, hey, I can be a detective there up there. You know, they've got 20 detectives or whatever their numbers are, canine officer, whatever their and plus the pay on top of it and the financial incentives. You know, Petaluma, what do you have to offer? Well, we got a great community, we got a great police department, we work with some very dedicated people. Well, how much is the money? Well,
but it's so rewarding to be in this great.
It is. It really is. But as somebody, like I said, somebody trying to afford housing here in this in Sonoma County, you know, because we want to live where we work.
You need a living wage to do it, for sure.
Absolutely. So it's a challenge on all fronts.
And you guys both live in Petaluma.
Correct.
Is that true of most of the officers? Because I know in the past some of them have actually
50%?
Lived in
Petaluma. Yeah, I think our younger, generation, I think it because of the housing, the cost of housing, I think it's making it a little bit more challenged to live specifically in Petaluma.
Yeah.
You know, they live north, they stay in Sonoma County.
The closer you get to San Francisco, the more expensive it is.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think majority were very fortunate, even for our records personnel and stuff like that. They dispatchers, they live in Petaluma. Police officers obviously live in Petaluma, so we're very fortunate in that aspect that we live and work in the same community.
Well, great. I think I speak for all three of us when I say that we're really pleased to have you here and
to
hear about this program. It's a good thing, and I know Officer Dan has to get back to the campus, so if there's anything else you want to offer, please do. Otherwise, we won't hold you up.
No, we're just happy to be here, and thank you for inviting us. Wasn't as bad as I thought, so thank you.
It would be great, you know, if you came back, you know, if there was times you wanted had things you wanted to talk about,
sure,
you'd send me a call and set up a time. That would
absolutely
be great. Or if there
we'd
are other people
to.
In the department. I was talking with the records keeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are interested. How are records kept? What do people actually do in the department? It's let's not make it a mystery.
Yeah. I think, you know, in talking about, you know, our hiring crisis right now, I mean, it's even one of the things, just being in the schools and talking to the kids. First thing I tell them is if any of your parents are looking for a job, you need dispatchers, you know, so if they can type and answer phones.
And we need cops, too.
So there's open positions right now.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of open positions.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we're always taking volunteers.
Okay.
You know, JP does a great job with our volunteer program. I'm gonna throw out a little plug for something that
please
I do. I do Christmas with a cop, shop with a cop. Every December, started that program. Gosh, I don't know. It's been running for a while. And basically, what we do is we find less fortunate kids that aren't going to have a great Christmas, and we identify them through the school district and partner with Target, and we take gift certificates specifically for Target. And we pair them. Sergeant Walsh helped me out last year, and a few years before that, we take kids around Target and let them pick out items for themselves and for their family.
Wow.
We get them wrapped up so they have something to open up for Christmas. It's a little selfish plug there. So
not at all.
We are going to we're going to be starting that up. Probably start looking to get some Target gift cards here pretty quick. So if any listeners want to drop those off at the police department, that'd be awesome.
Is there a website or anything that describes this, or just go to the police department?
I think this year we have a great volunteer coordinator. We call her JP, Jennifer Pritchard, but she just goes by JP. She's our volunteer coordinator. We're going to put something out on the police website.
Great.
And our social media. Probably towards October, and start seeking those gift cards. But the more cards we can get, the more kids we can take. And our support from the cops has just been awesome. I think last year we had 14 or 15 cops show up and taking kids around. So great program.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for all your great work, you guys.
And if
really
you write something up about the shop with a cop, I'd be happy to announce it on both of my shows.
That's right. Great. Thank
when
you
you're
very
ready,
much.
Let me know.
Thanks, Cindy.
Okay.
We'll
definitely.
All right.
It.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're going to take just a little break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and I think we had a pretty good discussion going there. What do you guys think?
That was great discussion.
Yeah.
I'm glad they were able to give us their time. I mean, they've got so much to do, and anyway, so we let them out early, but
it
was great.
It was a short notice, and I thought it was very interesting. And it was great reconnecting with somebody I knew when he was a kid.
Well, it's a scary prospect, the whole idea of gun violence in schools. It's this ever-repeating tragedy, unfortunately. And a lot of people have a lot of ideas on how we could lessen the frequency of these events. Unfortunately, we haven't had one in Petaluma. But like everything, as much preparation as we can do for this thing we hope never happens is probably a good thing to do. And I'm glad that we were able to get the grant in order to have that happen.
I think it's really important that kids interact with your police department. You know, it's a positive thing. Yep. They can learn the positive parts about it and actually have a real dialogue. And, you know, you really realize that they can take one young person and make a change in their lives just by spending time and caring.
And Dan seems like a great guy. And
yeah, he does.
A nice smile, very easy to talk to. It's not an easy job.
Yeah.
And I don't envy the life of a police officer. And, and there are some really great police officers out there. And unfortunately, some that aren't so good end up getting a lot of press. And it's important to understand that there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I think the majority of them are good. My nephew, a Petaluma High graduate, is a San Francisco police officer. Mm-hmm. He worked down at Hunter's Point, and now he teaches officers how to drive. And so he's got a great gig, and he loves what he does. And as a child growing up, we always knew he'd be a police officer. Mm-hmm. Everything had to be very regimented, and it was about following the rules. And I have a grandson that's just like that.
Oh,
rule of law is a good thing.
Yeah.
We hope that everybody from the top down follows it.
It'll be interesting to see over time with all the turmoil that's going on in the world and, you know, with our president.
Yeah.
You know, has this really caused more problems?
Mm-hmm.
People seem to be more emboldened to do to just do whatever they want without thinking of other people. It'll be interesting to see. It's going to hit our community just as well as any community. We're no different.
That,
we think we are, but we're not.
That and self-entitlement, that really bugs
yeah.
me, the self-entitlement. It's just...
Yeah. It's different times.
Yeah, way yeah. different times.
Uh-huh.
Way different from when we were kids.
It was. I mean, I do remember the Stockton shooting that led to the assault weapon ban in California. I was pretty young when that happened, but it had a very chilling effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's very different now is the access to media and the 24-hour news cycle that we didn't have before. So this is a huge problem, but I think sometimes people get overwhelmed by the number of times they're hearing about these issues, and it becomes magnified and fear increases. And I think there's some people that unfortunately take advantage of that fear. And, you know, you have a gun industry with a profit motive that thrives on that fear. And so I guess my point is, on balance, yeah, we have to be prepared for these things, but I think also we can't allow our fear to run away with our responses. And anyway, it's great that we have this program. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that have ideas about putting more guns in schools as the answer, but I think what we're doing in Petaluma makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting how Sergeant Walsh avoided the topic of our U.S. Secretary of Education wanting to fund a program to put guns in the hands of teachers. And he won't say it, but I will, and I think it's an outrageous idea.
I could not even imagine
kids going to school knowing that the teacher's got a gun in the desk.
Well, even trained officers in a situation where there's, you know, a guy with a gun on a campus or in a store or whatever, things happen. People get caught in a crossfire. Imagine, you know, teachers having to perform those duties on top of teaching students.
Or on top of protecting the students.
And protecting
and, you know,
the
helping the students, you know, be in a safe place. And then they have to think about that I have to be part of a shooting.
Well, then the whole...
It doesn't make any sense.
The whole idea also of police not only having to take into account active shooters, but being able to differentiate a teacher who,
right.
or a student that has a gun. And how do you even know,
right.
you know, at a certain point who's the assailant and who's trying to protect the school?
And is that going to make the kids feel any safer?
No.
I'm surprised that 50% of the students, that's a huge
yeah.
percentage
I'm,
of people that don't feel safe.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's not rocket science. They're in the pocket of the NRA, and anything that equates to selling more guns is going to be a policy they're going to go with. And if someone thinks my statement is crazy, go look it up. Check out the relationships that some of these politicians have to the NRA and the gun industry. And there's definitely a connection there.
And there's resources out there where you can go look and see
yeah.
who's getting the money from the NRA.
You can.
Well, I mean, this is the problem with lobbying. You know, it started, you know, 20 years ago, you would go and you'd lobby and it'd actually get something, you know, flood control money or money for dredging. And, you know, nowadays, it just depends on who's lobbying you, what you're going to get.
Well, you're competing with other lobbyists,
right.
and there's only so many dollars. And unfortunately, some, you know, some politicians are just going to go where the most money is. That's a difficult one. But I'm glad at least our city council, when it came time to support a resolution to reinstate the assault weapons ban, that it was a near unanimous vote
right.
in supporting that resolution. This was back in 2013, I believe.
And who didn't vote for it?
Well, it was a unanimous council vote except for one, and that was Mike Harris, actually a current candidate for mayor. So, yeah, everybody else on the council voted in favor of that assault weapons ban. We were asked by Senator Dianne Feinstein to support that, and unfortunately he considered it a non-local issue in his response and refused to vote for it. It's certainly a local issue now. I mean, we're talking about this today about how this can be happening in our schools. So, yeah, I was disappointed in that vote, but I was glad to see that the other candidate for mayor obviously didn't flinch, and she's got support from the Brady organization as well as the Democratic Party. That would be Teresa Barrett. You know, this stuff with politics, people talk about parties and things like that, but they do impact your philosophy and your way of looking at life and the lens in which you perceive problems and solutions. So when people are considering, you know, who they want to support, you know, party affiliation and the positions that those affiliations represent, it certainly trickles down to the local level.
Absolutely, yeah. It starts at the local level.
Yes.
You know, it actually trickles up from the local level, the way I view it.
Yeah.
And, you know, from my perspective, you saw how the Tea Party started at the local level, school boards and at city councils. And then they moved up. Now they're in Washington, D.C., and this is where we're at today. So I think it's very important to know that local elections should not be nonpartisan. I want to know what party the person I'm voting for belongs to, because it really does make a difference for me and for many people.
I think for most people.
Well, I think that's why we're looking at a blue wave, because we're frightened of what we've seen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And lobbying money had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But I really think the Russians have a lot more to do with it. I think there's a lot of money that these candidates have received, these Republican candidates, because they seem to be afraid of the Russian connection. Mm. And that tells me there is some deep connection with these guys.
Yeah, and I have a feeling at the top of the hour when Matt and Jim get here, the two mooks, we're going to hear a lot about what happened this week. But we're going to leave that to them. We're staying local. we're the inside Petalumans, so. But I'm anxious to hear that show.
Yeah, I find it interesting. There's somebody running for city council that on his signs it says, he doesn't want to talk about politics, just about Petaluma.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, where do you think we get our money? State and federal funds. So if you're only expecting to talk about Petaluma, where's the funding going to come from?
Yeah.
It's not that simplistic.
Yeah.
Well, as a former council member, you would actually know how complicated it is.
Well, I understand how complicated it is, and I also, you know, I'm watching the division that's going on in this community, and there is like a division on three different issues, and it's just very interesting that people can jump into an issue that they feel strong about, but they miss everything that leads up to that decision, you know, how it's made.
I think I know what you might be talking about. I don't know if we're going to get into it today, but yeah, there's a couple issues around town.
Yeah. For sure. and besides that, it's interesting. People have lost friendships over some of these issues, and I am just kind of astonished at that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather agree to disagree and keep up a good debate than decide that you're not going to talk with somebody.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened, or the nastiness.
Yeah. And the Facebook piece of it.
Oh, my God.
Watching what's going on.
Facebook and next door, it's too much for me.
I know. It's become a war zone out there.
It's a war zone out there.
It's not the best form.
People are unfriending each other.
Yeah, it's not the best form. And then the problem, I think, there's a few problems with it, but one is, when you're out there in social media and you make a comment, there's this pressure about other people seeing that comment. And I think that adds a lot to what can become a very negative dynamic, where people post something and then, oh, someone commented on my post, I didn't like their reply, so I need to go reply because how am I looking in front of all these people? And part of that, it's just the format. Whereas if these two people that are having a discussion, or maybe three, if they were just among themselves, there'd be a whole different level of pressure involved, and maybe they'd, not be so stuck in their positions, and you could have a rational discussion.
That's exactly what they are, their positions. Half the time, they're not even factual. They're just pulling stuff out of the air.
Well, that's very true. Yeah. That's disheartening when you read things that you know are not factual and people are putting out.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that is one of the big things that's different right now in the time that we're living, is there used to be, you could have different ways of looking at things. You could have different political philosophies. You'd have different ideas. Maybe it's less government, more government, very simplistic, but just, that's an example. But nowadays, it's hard sometimes for people to even agree on baseline facts. And that's very disturbing to me when you know, we can interpret a fact and maybe have a different opinion about what we do with that fact. But now it seems like the fact itself is in question, and we have these alternative facts. Kellyanne Conway mentioned
that truth is truth.
Like truth is truth, and that's very disturbing.
That's right.
Because no matter how much you support a particular philosophy or a candidate or a party, there needs to be a basis for the data that we're discussing that we can agree is factual. I mean, numbers, actual numbers
yeah,
on things.
That's right. Yeah.
There's different interpretation of those numbers, but you can't deny the numbers.
Right.
And what we're seeing with our current, not to get too national, but just, I mean, it's affecting all of us, and it's affecting the youth as well. To see our president continue to lie overtly, I mean, these are lies. It's extremely disturbing, and sometimes I think, boy, are they just underestimating the intelligence, or is that just kind of where a lot of us are, where we can't even recognize, or we refuse to recognize them if it doesn't agree with our opinion?
Well, they've simplified things and dumbed things down. I have to say, I'm stunned at how many people I went to Petaluma High School mm-hmm. that are Trump supporters, and I mean, very racist.
Mm.
And it's stunning to learn about people on Facebook. Mm-hmm. When you went to high school, you never realized this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty stunning to me.
I think it's a relatively small number, but it doesn't make it any less concerning. But I think, you know, I'd have to go look at how we voted again. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I think there were very relatively few votes for Trump compared to Clinton in the last election. But
you mean here in Petaluma,
Petaluma.
I feel like I think I live in Trump neighborhood.
Yeah, you might.
I really do. I mean, there are American flags flying everywhere, which is fine. I support that. But it's a new insurgence of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing political signs up I've never seen before. And they're very conservative.
Yeah, yeah, I don't get the flag thing. I mean, that's not owned by any party, but it is funny to see. I've never felt a need to fly a flag. I live in the U.S. It's pretty obvious. I don't think I need to wave
right.
a flag saying I live in the U.S. I mean, here I am. Other people think differently, but it's interesting. I was just having that discussion with my son as we were walking up the street near where I live, and there's more American flags out. And I'm just wondering. I mean, I have no problem with it. It's just interesting. I just never felt a need.
Well, that's I feel like I haven't felt a need also,
mm-hmm.
and yet I'm seeing all the flags. So I'm wondering why they feel like they have to fly the flag. You know, I mean, I'll tell you, I don't like it that the flag would be burnt. I'm very staunch on certain things about the flag. You know, when I was a kid at Bernard Eldridge School,
mm-hmm.
being the flag person, to be able to fold it or put it up was such an honor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we would never drop it. It could never be on the floor.
Right.
And we would never wear a tie or a shirt
mm-hmm.
that had the American flag on it because it was so sacred. And that's kind of the way I was raised.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way about it. But I don't feel like it directs who I am.
Yeah. What about the Pledge of Allegiance? How do you feel about that?
I prefer to go back to the old Pledge of Allegiance instead of the newer one.
I think
what about in school, in the schools?
To me, the greatest thing about this country is that we don't require people to wave flags. We don't require people to make pledges. That flag, to me, has no meaning. Really, if we disallow people from choosing not to fly it if they want, choosing not to pledge to it, that's the whole point of it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I studied a little bit of constitutional law in college and am well aware of the fact that, you know, as maybe ridiculous as it might be and ineffective, if someone wants to burn the flag, that is constitutionally protected free speech. And, you know, if we become a country where you'd have no right to do that. Not that I advise doing it, not that I think it's even a smart thing to do.
Right.
It would not be the country that
I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
It's just not something I would do,
right.
But I do agree.
And that theory applies to a lot of things, not just the flag. I mean, take, for instance, abortion.
Yeah.
I personally would never be able to make that choice for myself, but...
You don't have to.
I'm not gonna tell a woman that she's not entitled to have an abortion if
be able to talk to their doctor about choices.
My position on abortion is very simple. If you don't have a womb, you don't have to make that choice. I'm not about to put anybody in a position to make that choice for somebody else.
Yeah. Well, I think what you've really realized is that was just an issue to bring people together to fight against each other so that they actually had something that people could grasp onto and believe that they're doing the right thing by deciding for other people. But it's really not that, as we've seen.
Exactly. Same with the flag, the same with the Pledge of Allegiance. That's how it's done.
These are hot-button issues for people. They're easy, and they work, unfortunately.
And they work,
A friend of mine...
Very divisive.
I wouldn't say he's a close friend, but I've known him for many, many years. He's in my industry. I'm not going to name him. We're Facebook friends. He was... not a Trump fan at all. He voted for him for one single reason. Abortion.
Interesting.
He's a born-again Christian.
Right.
And not to say that all born-again Christians, I don't even know what Christian means, frankly, because I don't... If someone says that, there's so many different types, I really have to kind of know what they mean. But his type, whatever, he is absolutely opposed to abortion rights. And so he doesn't like Trump. But that was the only reason he'd vote for him, and he'll vote for him again. He'll never vote for anybody that's a pro-choice candidate. And that's just what he's decided.
Well, I know running for city council, people would differentiate you. They could vote for you for city council, but not for Congress, Senate, or Assembly, because you would have those decisions to make. And so that was a real separation for religious people.
Mm-hmm.
Local elections, you don't vote on it, so you're okay to be in office. But you go into a higher office, that's when that... ties in.
Interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Well, I've had people say that to me.
Yeah.
That's why. They said, well, where do you stand on this? Oh, that's right. You don't vote on that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is with local elections, it's amazing how many conservative people I know get involved in issues that affect them around their homes that they will fight.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, they vote against their values or against their best, what's best for them because of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's definitely a line that I've learned.
Yeah. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people have lots of basis for their beliefs and their decisions, and sometimes it's religious, and that can sometimes be very difficult to reconcile. I know people who, you know, they are very sympathetic to allowing choice, but they have this strict code and have just decided that they can't bear that, and they don't want anyone else to bear it. And that's the problem I have with it, is if you want to make that decision for yourself, that's fine, but to impose it on other people without knowing their circumstance, without knowing the situation. I mean, that bill that was going around to try to deal with what was called...
Planned Parenthood, the one recently.
The late-term abortion. Okay. People trying to ban that as if this is a common practice.
Absolutely.
And I think even one of our supervisors, actually, on our Facebook page at one point, talked about how, you know, it shouldn't be allowed.
Yes, you did.
I just think that it doesn't take into account what people in those situations are actually going through, whether it's a health issue or, you know, extremely painful to deal with deformity problem. I mean, people don't make these decisions lightly, and I think the least you can do is give the woman who's in that situation the benefit of the doubt to make that decision with their doctor.
Well, I've known a few people that have had chose to have late-term abortions, a few.
Mm-hmm.
One chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their choice either way. And it was because of a deformity of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the child they knew would die within a day or less.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what happened with this one family.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the choice they made.
Mm-hmm.
The other couple that I know chose to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. And it was late term, and that's why they had it. But there was real clear decisions, and there were clear medical reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
People do not have a late term abortion because they don't want a child.
Yeah.
That's just not a reality.
You
but
just, you just don't walk into a doctor's office and say,
no,
give me the abortion. That's, there's counseling and discussions about it beforehand. It's not easy.
Well, and already the law allows some level of regulation at that point.
That's getting worse.
So it's not that you need to overturn Roe v. Wade to ensure that these things are not happening in a commonplace way, and they're not. So it's one of these things where people use that as an issue to sort of erode, rights in general. And
before my mom died, she shared with me somebody that chose to have an abortion, mm-hmm. and this was after World War II, and the reason was because of money. That is the wrong reason to have an abortion,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
she suffered for that her entire life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sad story.
Well, you know, I hate to cut this short.
Yeah. This is a good one to cut short.
Yeah, it is a good one to cut short. And I just want to remind everybody, you're listening to KPCA Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. And the show you've been listening to is Inside Petaluma with myself, Cindy Thomas, Jason Davies, and Janice Cater-Thompson. We're here with you every Friday at 11 to noon, so do come back. Thanks for being here. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
See you next
week.
Bye.
Are you looking for an alternative to the usual political punditry? With Free Range Radio, KPCA, look no further. Given the day of the week, local programmers delve into such topics as Pilates, mental health, and even independent journalism with guests that evoke honest and open discussions. Tune in at 103.3 FM or online at kpca.fm.
Hey, I'm Nick.
And I'm Boo.
We host the Nick Boo Show.
Are you tired of the mainstream tunes that other stations play over the airwaves? I'm sure you crave more diversity. Free Range Radio, KPCA, just might be a station for you. We host local producers that play anything from contemporary jazz to R&B to surf music. Tune in on 103.3 FM and online at kpca.fm.
KPCA, LP, Petaluma, California.